Chapter 6. Testing Limits. The day is finally full of dazzling sun and light winds. The last two weekends were dark and dreary. Dan's busy oiling the hangar doors and performing other chores around the property. He's frequently interrupted by jet lag, insisting he throw his ball. It's great to see Dan's old dog feeling better. Tinkering, that's all I'm doing today. I check every electrical connection, every nut, every bolt, and every control hinge attachment. I wipe off all smudges and fingerprints from my plane. I apply Armor-All Protectant to the sidewalls of the three tires and to the black leather seat covers. I've done all of this before, now I'm doing it again. What are you up to, Mark? Are you stalling? Don't you think it's about time we smashed some bugs onto that thing? Here, toss me the keys, Dan suggests as he and Jetlag wander over. These little planes use ignition switches, not keys, but I know what he means, and I'm excited at the thought of Dan taking my plane up for its maiden test flight. I was hoping you'd take her up. I told Jennifer my caterpillar was probably going to sprout its wings and fly today. Well, Mark, let's see if your new butterfly is airworthy first. Dan always does a thorough pre-flight on his own plane, and he's in no hurry inspecting mine. One doesn't want any unexpected surprises on a plane's first test flight. Last weekend, Dan helped me perform a ground break-in and adjustment of the engine, so everything's ready to go today. Dan starts the engine with one pull from the starter handle above his head and studies the engine instruments. He buckles in and taxis out to the runway. Performing an engine run-up, he checks the controls and makes sure the fuel selector level is turned on. Amelia happens by and stands with me in jet lag to watch Dan take my plane up. Even though Dan and Rich occasionally take Amelia flying, I see by the look in her eyes that she probably doesn't get enough time in the air herself. Dan runs the engine at idle for what seems like 10 minutes while sitting in position on the runway. When we hear the engine finally throttle up, Jetlag offers a woof as if to grant his owner takeoff clearance. The plane darts forward. Upon liftoff, I can guarantee that I have more butterflies in my stomach than the always unflappable Dan has probably had in a lifetime. In the cool, thick morning air, my plane launches skyward, as if it had been awaiting permission to be unleashed from gravity's tight grip. Dan climbs high over dreamland to circle at a safe altitude while checking out all the controls and engine instruments. Each of our planes is fitted with ballistic parachutes. With one pull of the emergency handle, a rocket motor would propel the parachute canopy out for quick deployment. The chute is attached by a thick cable to the top of the plane's main spar. After deployment, the occupants would have to do nothing but ride slowly back to Earth. I read a few old stories of crippled ultralights successfully deploying at altitudes as low as 100 feet. Our model sport plane has a good safety record, but it's nice to have that parachute as a backup. Fortunately, Dan will not need the ballistic parachute today because everything on the plane performs flawlessly. When he finally returns to terra firma, he's obviously pleased with its performance. Shutting down the engine, Dan sits in my plane with a grin and says, "Hey, Mark, you've got one heck of a sweet airplane, but I think I've worked up a bit of an appetite. You want to go get a burger? All right, I'll help you lock up the hangar and we can take my truck. Jetlag can ride in the back and Amelia can go too if she wants." Amelia glances over at me with a funny look on her face, and her mouth is a bit crooked. Mark, I think Dan wants to take you to lunch in your plane. I don't think he's had enough flying in that new bird of yours yet. My legs approach spaghetti status, and all I can manage to mumble is, I guess. With a sympathetic pat on my back, Amelia leaves me to negotiate with Dan. I knew this moment had to come, but why so soon? "You know, Dan, I'm not sure we should leave Jetlag here all by himself," I plead.
"Good idea. You can hold him in your lap," Dan shouts sarcastically. "Come on, Mark. Jetlag knows the drill. He'll be fine with Amelia. Now let's get you suited up. You're gonna love it."
After bundling up in my new flight gear, I reluctantly settle into the right seat. Dan is seated next to my left elbow. Our legs stretch out horizontally, with our feet each resting comfortably on their respective rudder pedals. The lone control stick is forward and between the seats. All of our planes are designed to be used for student training, so they're set up to be flown from either seat. Above me is the bright red wing with the engine mounted on top. The black prop swings behind us and the tail is about 6 feet farther back. The wing is redundantly secured by 8 strong steel cables. Our seats sit low, with our bottoms only inches from the ground. Maybe this won't be too scary. I feel like I'm sitting in a go-kart with wings. Dan makes sure I'm properly outfitted with warm gloves and flight suit.
We wear sunglasses to shield the wind and headsets so we can communicate. The air temperature is about 60 degrees, so we must protect ourselves from the 45-mile-per-hour wind chill we'll experience while airborne. As we taxi out to the runway, we bump along and I recall my studies of basic airmanship. I watch while Dan does a quick control check. Stick back, tail elevator up. Stick forward, elevator down. This will control the pitch attitude for climbing and descending. Stick right and left, wing ailerons up and down. The ailerons are used to create differential lift to bank the airplane when we turn. When the rudder pedals are pushed left and right, the tail's rudder deflects in agreement. This will make the plane yaw left and right. With the engine instruments up to proper temperature, Dan asks if I'm ready. Quite sure that I'm not ready, I give him a tentative smile and a thumbs up anyway. Lined up on Dreamland's smooth green runway, I'm astonished by the snappy acceleration as Dan advances the throttle. In a flash, the grass is a green blur. In what must only be 50 feet, Dan pulls back a little on the stick, the nose wheel rises, and we leap off the ground. I find myself suddenly operating on sensory overload, the onslaught of cool air and the snarl of the propeller. Mother Earth, which I happen to be very fond of, falls briskly beneath. All that Dan hears in his headphones is my involuntary chant of, "Oh my God, oh my God." In a matter of seconds, I feel small and naked with nothing under us but thin air and a most solid ground below. My legs are paralyzed, my breathing is furious, and my grip is fast. Glancing sideways, I see Dan's teeth exposed as he happily smiles. I'm not sure if he's taking pleasure in my obvious terror or if it's because he loves flying so much. A part of me hopes his teeth end up caked with disgusting bugs for making me do this. A funny thing happens, however. My shock and fear is quickly transformed to awe at the beauty which lies before me. My hands relax their grip and my eyes widen. My whole being soaks in the experience. As we climb above 500 feet, a distinct pattern of farm fields are revealed. The vista is like nothing I've ever seen before. I'm now part of the beautiful blue sky. To be up in the air without restrictions of view, I feel like a bird. This is flying. Dan looks content and relaxed. The most intelligent and profound statement I can come up with is, unbelievable. I gain comfort and confidence knowing Dan's in the left seat. He handles the plane in a careful and professional manner. Each control movement smooth and precise, always monitoring the instruments and scanning the sky for potential problems. Suddenly, I'm startled by the spectacle of a big red-tailed hawk flying directly in front of us. His keen eyes momentarily glance our way, and then he redirects his attention to the field below. We're so close, I could almost lean forward to pluck feathers from his wing. What a magnificent bird! I've heard of rare instances where large planes might strike a bird and sustain damage to the jet engines, although I understand they've designed the engines to be more bird-resistant. To prevent bird strikes, some airports have even implemented programs to scare away flocks of birds by firing pyrotechnics. Not sure if Dan has spotted the impending collision, I warn. Look out, Dan! Don't hit that hawk! Dan laughs at my naivete. He could just as easily hit us. We're flying at about the same speed, and that hawk wouldn't let me hit him if I tried. This is his territory. He's the real boss up here. Feeling foolish, I realize this machine actually blends in with nature, rather than plowing through it. Our flight is more exhilarating than I could have imagined. I can hardly wait to tell the girls about this experience when I get home. They'll absolutely not believe it. When Dan senses I've settled down, he offers me the controls. He first tells me to learn the feel of each control response. A little nervous, I clutch the control stick. With a firm grip, I'm anxious to show Dan I can be a good pilot with lightning-fast reactions. Sensing each aircraft movement, I work the controls to quickly counter. I'm determined to prevent the plane from slipping out of control. I manipulate the stick with rapid jerking movements. The plane wobbles, rocks, and pitches about, but I manage to prevent us from tipping over. Struggling vigorously, I say, "I'm doing it!" But it's harder than I thought it would be. Dan allows me a minute of battling with the plane before he finally says, "Whoa, Mark, easy there, you're working way too hard. Why don't you just let go of the stick for a while?" Hardly able to speak because of my intense concentration on the task at hand, I manage to respond, "Huh? Are you sure? Okay, here, you take it back." I tentatively release my grasp of the stick, and to my surprise, Dan doesn't grab hold of it. "Here, Dan, you better take it now." Dan replies, "Why? Just leave the stick alone and let the plane do its own thing." I'm really in for a ride now, and I better hold on. With no one at the controls, Dan's going to allow the plane to corkscrew and wander wildly about the sky. But to my amazement, nothing happens. The plane just cruises along. Although impressed, I'd feel better if one of us had our hand close to the stick, just in case. See, Mark, the airplane knows how to fly better than you or I. There's no need to fight it because it has a natural built-in stability. Engineers design planes to fly hands-off. Planes won't just tip over. It requires effort on the pilot's part to make a plane do anything but fly straight and level. And the best pilots use the least amount of control movement. You should only use light pressures on the control stick to ease the plane in the direction you wish to go. The smoother, the better. That's how airline pilots do it. They maintain the smoothest flight possible so as not to spill drinks or upset the flight attendants. Now, try it again, but this time with just one finger on top of the stick. And relax. I guess he's right. During his little speech, my plane flies straight ahead, all by itself. I suppose if I were an aeronautical engineer, that's how I design airplanes. Safety and stability would have to take priority over all other considerations. Otherwise, one's engineering career would be rather brief. As this concept sinks in, I realize that airplanes really can be docile and well-behaved. Taking a deep breath to prepare myself, I place a finger on top of the control stick to experiment. Working the controls more smoothly allows me to gauge the airplane's reactions. Gently, I draw the stick back to see how the plane responds. We pitch up, and I can feel my body becoming a little heavier. Then, gingerly pressing forward on the stick, the plane's nose falls, and my stomach immediately responds to the sinking sensation. Next, I ease the stick side to side to see the effects on roll. Bank right, then bank left. Next, I give the rudder pedals a slight shove with my feet to experience yaw. Nose right, then nose left. Dan coaches me on the coordinated use of the rudder and ailerons. For a properly executed turn, he tells me to push on the right rudder pedal as I ease the stick to the right. He demonstrates that using too much or not enough rudder will cause a skidding sensation. A well-executed turn results in no side forces whatsoever. Learning a new skill takes effort. After 10 minutes, I can feel fatigue setting in from my concentrated focus on flying the plane. Dan senses this and offers to take back the controls. In no time at all, flying the plane has become simpler, and my nervousness subsides. It's fun learning how to operate the controls, but it's also nice to relax and enjoy the ride. Before I know it, Dan has us circling 700 feet above a country diner next to a two-lane highway. I'm surprised at how quickly I'm adjusting to our height without the apprehension I had earlier. From way up here, I can smell the greasy odor of grilled hamburgers wafting from the restaurant below. Across the highway from the diner is a big patch of gravel where a number of cars and big rig trucks are parked. Beyond is a large picnic area with tables and a grassy section bordered by oak trees. Through the intercom, I hear Dan say, "You hungry? This place has the best burgers around." My stomach is really too nervous and excited to be hungry, but I decide to go along. "Where are we going to land? The highway's too busy and there's no runway." "We don't need no stinking runways. I'm hungry," Dan announces with a phony Mexican accent. He chops the throttle and I lurch forward in my seat as we descend rapidly over the road. The engine is silent and the propeller casually freewheels as my mind flashes through a scenario of playing chicken with an 18-wheeler. I look down the highway for prospective hazards when Dan banks the plane sharply to the left. The world tilts on its side as we gyrate around. Then we roll level pointed at the picnic area and my senses can catch up. Dan swoops down over the treetops. We line up on a grassy patch alongside the picnic tables as a dark green blur streaks by beneath my feet. I instinctively lift my legs, fearing we may snag a tree branch. There are some families gathered around those picnic tables who are about to get a big surprise. We plunge down past the trees and round out for a soft touchdown on the scruffy green and brown spotted lawn. Bouncing along for just a moment, we coast by some wide-eyed children eating on a bench to our right. Dan squeezes the stick-mounted handbrake to slow our landing roll. In one motion, he turns off the intercom and flips the motor's kill switch. The propeller sweeps to a halt, and we get out of the plane. My head is tugged back into the cockpit as I've forgotten to take off my headset. I struggle to keep my hands from shaking as I try to appear as calm as Dan, but it's hardly fair because he's probably done this a few hundred times before. Just as the first of the curious leave their picnics to approach us, Dan quickly turns to me and says, "You finish securing the plane, and I'll go order us some burgers. Don't be too long." I get the feeling Dan doesn't want to stay and play 20 questions with the small crowd that's gathering, so he's decided to ditch me. But that's okay. I don't mind sharing my vast knowledge with the interested onlookers. Proud of my machine, I gladly answer their many questions. Once everyone's satisfied with my explanations, I walk across the highway and into the diner. Feeling akin to a celebrity, I stroll by a few onlookers eating their lunch to find Dan half-finished with his burger and mine sitting at the other side of the table getting cold. Dan found us a spot next to the window, which is all the better to keep an eye on my precious baby. I sit down and prepare my burger with a necessary flood of obligatory ketchup. The waitress stops by to see what I'd like to drink, and she notices our pile of gloves and scarves on the table, as well as our bulky flight suits pulled down around our waists. So where'd you guys drive in from? She asks. What's the matter? Did your rig's heater go out?
Well, actually, our rig's air conditioner is stuck on full blast.
Dan points out the window to my plane, sitting in the picnic area across the highway. Amazed, the wide-eyed waitress looks back at us.
You guys flew in on that? Wow, I guess that would get a little breezy.
She heads off to get me an iced tea as Dan takes another big bite from his burger. I add a pool of ketchup to my plate in preparation for the large wedge-cut fries. Unsure if Dan will be able to pause long enough from his burger, I say, Man, that hawk was amazing. At first I was so nervous flying, but after you showed me how stable the airplane was, I was able to relax. Still hard for me to deal with all three dimensions at once. I can hardly walk and chew gum at the same time. Do you really think you're going to have any luck teaching this old dog new tricks? After a strained swallow, Dan responds,
I reckon, but it's going to be up to you to read some more books on aerodynamics, weather regulations, and stuff. There's a lot to learn and there's a lot to practice. I think you'll do fine, and if you make good progress, we'll have to get you some floats for the summer.
Dan was right about the burgers here. My first taste was most delectable. It was a handmade patty of fresh ground beef, not the usual frozen slab you find at chain restaurants. Floats? Is that what I saw on the back of the hangar? Looked to me like four big pontoons or kayaks stacked in the corner.
When the weather turns warm, Rich and I install our floats. We like to fly out to the Delta waters to do some exploring and swimming. Float flying's a blast. It opens up a whole new world for sport flying.
That sounds like fun, but how do you take off and land the plane with the floats on?
Dan explains. The floats have retractable landing gear. They're amphibious. With the pull of a lever, the wheels go up for water landings and release the lever and the wheels are down for land operations. But the best part of float flying is our annual trip to Lake Monticello. Every August, Rich and I go up there to enjoy the excellent flying, clear blue waters, and the warm, sunny days. Everywhere you look, gorgeous scenery and wonderful wildlife. We camp under the stars on an isolated beach. The trip's four unforgettable days with not a care in the world. Heaven on earth. So beautiful, it's hard to imagine.
I've never been to Lake Monticello, but know that it's north, not far from the Napa Valley wine country. It's the sort of place you see photos of in coffee table books and calendars. It's a secluded, pristine lake, and by all accounts, it's gorgeous. To be able to join Dan and Rich on their trip would be fantastic, but the preparation required in the relatively short time would indeed test my limits of learning. Forgetting my burger for a minute, I ask, "Do you think you can get me ready in time to make the trip?" It's hard to believe how fast things are moving. At first, I just wanted to learn to fly, but now I want to learn to operate on floats, too. And to top it off, in a mere 6 months, be ready to take a trip to Lake Monticello. Dan works his last big mouthful of burger and gives me a prolonged stare, sizing me up. Finally, he replies with a pensive, "Maybe. Just maybe."